Hey there,
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jessica, and this is All Things Sensory by Harkla. Together, we're on a mission to help children, families, therapists, and educators live happy, healthy lives.
We dive into all things sensory, special needs, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, and so much more. In each episode, we share raw, honest, fun ideas and strategies for everyone to implement into daily life.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, everyone. We are back and we are excited to talk about a very unique topic today. I'm Rachel.
I'm Jessica. And yeah, we're talking about something that I feel like there's not a lot of good information about this topic out there.
No, but it's something that we see clinically a lot.
And we've talked about it on previous podcasts, just mentioned it. And then we've also mentioned it on our Instagram before as well. So if you're a therapist, this is going to be really great. And if you're a parent, it's really great for everyone.
It's great for everyone.
So it's a good thing you're here.
So today we are talking about overflow or overflow associated movements, and we're going to break down what exactly it is, why it's important to recognize it, when it's normal, when it's a red flag, when we need to look into it, when it could be dysfunction. And then we're going to give you some strategies, of course, to work through overflow if it is a challenge. So stay with us because we're gonna give it all to you today.
Yeah. So we'll start with defining what overflow is, and we'll also link all of our resources in the show notes so that you can read the full articles where we got a lot of this information. So
yeah, we found some great research articles too.
Some really good ones. So motor overflow refers to the involuntary movements which may accompany the production of voluntary movements. While overflow is not usually seen in the normal population, it does present in children and the elderly, as well as those suffering certain neurological dysfunctions.
So age-inappropriate overflow movements, for example, mirror movement. So if you move one hand in a certain way, your opposite hand is going to mirror that movement. These are motor signs thought to reflect immaturity in cortical systems involved in an automatically inhibiting extraneous movement. That's very scientific. We're going to break it down.
So technical. So basically, going with those two definitions that we just talked about, I think you mentioned if you're moving one hand and doing something on purpose with one hand, and you see overflow associated movements with the other hand that are not on purpose, that's what we're talking about.
So do you guys remember when we talked about the like Chinese boating balls in your hands where you're doing the in-hand manipulation? You're like making those two balls like go in a circle in your hand.
We did that. We talked about that on our palmar grasp reflex episode. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, and we have an Instagram video so you can see that. But that is what we're talking about. That's just a quick example of overflow. When I think you were doing it in the video, but you're trying to move those balls in a circle and then your other hand is moving kind of in the same pattern because you're concentrating so hard on those movements in your right hand that it's overflowing into that left hand as well. And maybe the mouth as well.
Yeah, that's the other part of it is we see a lot of overflow into the oral structures, the lips, the jaw, the tongue. And even the eyes, mm-hmm. you'll see it sometimes too. So hopefully that all makes sense.
I think it's important to note that overflow is normal and it's a natural part of the developmental process. So in infants and babies, we see overflow into the hands and mouth during feeding, sucking, which is a good sign that their brain and body are working together.
Yeah. And so those are actually related to primitive reflexes. So that's related to the palmar grasp reflex and then the sucking and rooting reflex as well. And so if you don't see that overflow in infants during feeding, that can actually be a sign of dysfunction as well. If you don't see the overflow, mm-hmm. that's normal at that time.
So that overflow in infants and toddlers is normal and a natural part of that developmental process. Like we said, it helps these children learn how to meet those developmental milestones like rolling side to side, front to back, crawling in a good crawling pattern, walking, manipulating objects with their hands. I mean, right now, Trip is a year old and we're recording this.
Oh my gosh, he's a year old.
I know.
Can't even handle it. If you've been here for a while, do you remember when we would record episodes before Trip?
Yes, it's crazy.
Oh my gosh.
But anyways.
Okay.
He will like shake a toy and like make it make noise, and his other hand is shaking too. Mm-hmm. So he can't disassociate his left from his right yet to be able to shake an object or pick up a bean off the floor, because his other hand mimics that. It mirrors that same pattern, which is normal at his age.
For this age, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So what happens if these overflow associated movements continue as the child ages? It can be a sign of dysfunction.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about what we see during like an OT session. If we were working with a kiddo during, let's say, a fine motor task, let's say the child is completing something like writing or cutting or stringing beads, and we'll see them like pushing their tongue into their cheek, moving their lips, sticking their tongue out sometimes, cutting. Oftentimes we'll see the mouth like open and shut with the scissors opening and shutting. That's a big one.
And a lot of times too, with these fine motor tasks, if the child is so focused with using their dominant hand, then their non-dominant hand might also have some movement associated there.
That's why we like to, you know, make sure the opposite hand is stabilizing whatever they're working on. And we like to make sure that that opposite hand has a functional task, which we will talk about in our strategy section later on.
So then we're also going to see some overflow during certain gross motor activities. So if a child is completing like a balance beam or trying to coordinate their upper body or lower body movements, we might see that similar overflow into their mouth, like we just talked about with fine motor tasks. And then we might see overflow into other parts of the body. So that's just their brain and body's inability to separate those movements apart.
You know which one I'm thinking of right now?
Which one?
You know, the snowball maker, the open and shut.
I love the snowball maker.
Yeah. So that is like a little handheld device that you grab the handles. You can get them at like the grocery store during the winter seasons, but you open it and it closes to make the snowball. And so we would like transfer objects. But I remember so many kiddos opening that and trying to work so hard to open and close to pick up objects that their mouths would just be like opening and closing and opening and closing. And it took so much effort and so much concentration that almost every kiddo had some sort of overflow.
Yeah. Another time we're going to see these overflow movements is during primitive reflex activities. So we might see it during duck or pigeon walking, and that's where you're going to walk with either your toes pointed out or your toes pointed in, and you're going to see associated movements in the hands, arms, and typically the mouth.
Mm-hmm. You'll also see some overflow with the Superman banana exercises for the tonic labyrinthine reflex, as well as lizard crawls, which we like to do for the ATNR, the asymmetric tonic neck reflex. And so those ones you can help work through, and you know, we'll talk about our strategies, but we just want to bring that awareness of those primitive reflexes. Those exercises take a ton of concentration and a lot of work to do, especially for those who have severely retained reflexes. So we want to be cautious of that.
So one other time that we'll see these overflow movements in, say, an OT session are during any activity that requires a significant amount of focus or skills that are beyond the child's current level. Now, that's not to say that like an 8-year-old who should be able to cut, it's more like an 8-year-old who developmentally is at a 4-year-old level and is just learning to cut. Mm-hmm. That's what we mean by that.
Yeah. So some games like suspend, which is a balancing game, dribbling a ball is a big one.
Yes.
Stacking blocks, if it's a really challenging activity for a young kiddo, swinging on a platform swing while you're trying to clip a toy onto a rope, those types of activities that require the multisensory processing aspect as well, we can see a lot of overflow there.
Yep. And I think the one that comes to mind the most for me is the tongue sticking out, mm-hmm. or the tongue in the cheek during a really, really focused mm-hmm. activity.
Yep. So let's talk about who struggles with associated movements and why. Now, this is where we found some research to kind of back this and explain it a little bit more, because sometimes it's unclear, you know? So we're going to break it down, explain this a little bit more in detail to help you understand why and who are struggling with these overflow movements.
Yeah. Okay. So the first one, overflow is observed in people with neurological impairments and in healthy children and adults during strenuous and attention demanding tasks. In this particular study, they found that young infants produce vast amounts of motor overflow, which we talked about, that's normal. But then while manipulating an object with one hand, all of these typically developing 4 to 7.5 month old infants were observed to display these overflow movements with their free hand. So just like we just talked about, it's normal. It's a part of the developmental process for these infants and young children, these toddlers, to have a lot of overflow when they're doing these activities.
But it should go away.
Exactly.
So another research article that we found shows that children with ADHD showed significantly more overflow movements. So ADHD is
a neurological condition.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so this next one talked about theories on overflow movements consistently implicate impairments in the white matter tracts, including the corpus callosum. So the white matter connections in the brain might be altered and thus influence motor behaviors. So again, it's such a neurological connection when we're talking about these overflow movements.
So interesting. I love it when the research backs what we see. It's just so cool, right? Thank goodness. That's so the beauty of OT.
Quick side note, all of our fellow OTs and OTAs are going to love this, because what we do needs to have that research behind it, that evidence-based practice. Mm-hmm. So here we are.
Here we are.
Okay.
Yes.
Moving on.
So another one said the frequency of associated movements has been reported to decrease with age, but can be seen in adults under stress, extreme force, and fatigue.
I will say that I notice myself having a little bit of overflow sometimes if I'm like really, really focused.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. So,
but I'm aware of it. Mm-hmm. So I will consciously try to not have the overflow.
At least not so much that people can know.
Yes, yes. But it's so funny because, you know, people who aren't aware of overflow will say, oh, it's so funny, you know, I stuck my tongue out as a kid when I was doing this, this, and this. And us were like, oh, you got some overflow going on.
let's give you some ideas.
Let's dive deeper into that. But, you know, to the typical population, you're not going to realize that it could be a negative thing. You just think it's funny.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we've got a little bit more here. So in another study, they found that in the elderly and the neurologically impaired, changes in brain function produce these overflow movements. So inhibitory signals in the motor corticals are reduced and ineffective in controlling the specificity of commands going to each limb, and then deficits in the corpus callosum and other parts of the brain tracts have been implicated in motor overflow. So it's just, you know, backing up the other research articles saying that if you're seeing these overflow movements in older children and adults, there's something going on in the brain.
Yes.
What this is saying.
I will say I thought it was interesting that in ages 3 to 6, the overflow was noted more in the extensor muscles. And from ages 7 to 11, the overflow was more pronounced in the flexors.
That's weird.
Yeah. So the more the child exerts to complete a task, the more overflow associated movements that will be present. Crazy.
So interesting. So if your child is exhibiting these overflow movements and they're at an age where they shouldn't be, where those associated movements should be gone and they should be able to control those movements, or if you're a therapist and you're working with these kids who have tons of overflow, let's talk about what you can do.
That's why you're all here.
Favorite part of the episode. Okay, we just wanted to take a minute and talk to you about our company, Harkla.
Our mission at Harkla is to help those with special needs live happy and healthy lives. Not only do we work to accomplish this through the podcast, but we also have therapy products, digital courses, and a ton of free resources on YouTube and our website to try to bring holistic care to you and your family.
Listeners of the All Things Sensory podcast get 10% off their first purchase at Harkla with the discount code SENSORY.
We would highly recommend checking out some of our bestsellers like the compression sensory swing, the weighted blankets, and of course, our course on sensory diets and primitive reflexes.
The cool thing is that 1% of each sale gets donated to the University of Washington Autism Center to support autism research and fund scholarships for families in need to receive in-clinic therapy for their children.
Learn more about Harkla and all we have to offer at harkla.co, that's harkla.co, and use the code SENSORY to get 10% off your first purchase. That's SENSORY for 10% off.
And don't forget that all Harkla orders come with a lifetime guarantee and free shipping.
All right, let's get back to the show.
So let's discuss what you're going to do if your kiddo is above the average age where they shouldn't be presenting with overflow associated movements. What should you do?
So first, you want to do these activities more often. So one of the reasons they're exhibiting this overflow is because their brain's not processing the information. So you need to do these challenging activities or exercises on a more regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Another trick we like to do is to provide video feedback. So it's simply just taking a video of the kiddos while they're doing these activities. And I personally don't like to bring it to their attention. I like to take a video and then have the kiddo watch the video back with me. And I like to see if they can identify what's going on. And so I'm not necessarily pointing out, look at your other hand, look at your tongue, you know, you have overflow. It's more like, what do you notice? Mm-hmm. Why do you feel like you're doing that? Why is your tongue sticking out?
Yep.
Shall we try pushing your tongue to the roof of your mouth next time? You know, is that an expected behavior to have your tongue sticking out in the middle of class? You know, things like that where I'll kind of play detective and let them help work through it after they watch their video.
Another trick is if you're noticing overflow in the opposite hand during a functional fine motor task, give that other hand something to do. So that could be squeezing a stress ball or putting your hands on your hips if you're doing like a duck or pigeon walk. And if you give that body part something else to do, it will decrease that overflow and help dissociate those movements.
Like we were talking about earlier with cutting, you know, stabilizing the paper with the opposite hand while drawing, holding that paper so it's not moving, and chewing gum or pushing your tongue to the roof of the mouth. Those proprioceptive based activities are really helpful as well.
Yeah. So a big one is integrating those primitive reflexes. So if the primitive reflexes are retained or still in the body, then the body is not going to dissociate certain movement patterns and certain sides of the body. So we need to get those primitive reflexes integrated so that new neural pathways are created and the body can move freely with more control.
Mm-hmm. Yoga moves are great. Rock climbing is great. Those types of activities that really work on disassociating left and right, top and bottom. They take a lot of strength and control and balance. Those activities are going to be great to practice.
Yeah. As always, we recommend working with an occupational therapist or occupational therapy assistant who is trained in sensory integration and primitive reflex integration, because they are going to have some great strategies for overflow and some good ideas for parents to take home or for educators to use in the schools. Yeah.
Absolutely. Make sure you check out our primitive reflex digital course. We do have a course that goes into detail testing primitive reflexes, 5 of the most common ones, as well as activities, functional activities, and exercises to work towards integration.
Yeah. And then listen to some of our previous podcast episodes on primitive reflexes. You know, we mentioned the palmar grasp reflex episode where we talked about overflow when we're doing fine motor activities and how it's related to that primitive reflex. So,
okay. So that
wraps up our episode on overflow associated movements.
But don't leave yet.
Because we are doing something new. We are opening up a Q&A session at the end of every podcast episode now. So that means that you can send us your questions via DM on Instagram, voice message on Instagram, email, Facebook, however you want to contact us. Send us your questions and we are going to do just like a quick Q&A at the end of our episodes.
Okay, so let's do it. We're going to answer two questions today. And the first question is, what are some tricks for a child who hates having their face wiped? Now, let me tell you what Rachel's response was when we read this question and put it in this episode. Her response was, all kids hate having their face wiped.
Yeah. I will say I was literally wiping Tripp's face this morning or trying to wipe his nose this morning. And he hates it.
And he's what, 12 months?
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's a good point, is that infants, and especially as they're starting to assert independence at this, you know, 12, between basically 1 and 4 years old.
Great. Okay, I've got a long ways to go.
Let's be real. They're probably not going to like having their face wiped because, one, it's not their choice. Mm-hmm. Two, it probably stops them from doing whatever it is they were doing before. Mm-hmm. But if we're talking about from a sensory perspective, a child who struggles with tactile processing and hates the texture and the feel of their face being wiped, that's a different story.
So here's my thoughts. First of all, how would you like it if someone came at you with a wipe and pulled on your nose and wiped on your face and you don't know how hard it is that, you know, how hard they're pushing? Or I'm number one, I just think, just empathize. Think about how uncomfortable that is. Maybe we should try it and see how we like
it. Sure.
Okay. It's terrible. Number two, have the kiddo practice wiping their own face. Teach them to do it themselves.
Yes.
I will hand Tripp a wet wipe and have him practice wiping his face. He imitates me. He practices. He does it himself. Is it great? No. Does he try? Yes, that's fine.
Use a mirror.
Throw a mirror in front of the kiddo so they can see.
Yep. Give them some warning. Let them know, hey, you have jelly on your face. Let's clean it off and give them the opportunity, like Rachel said, to wipe it themselves. And then maybe you help.
Mm-hmm. Go to the sink and have them get their hands wet and then wash their face or wash their nose and then dry it with a towel.
Yep. Try maybe some different types of material for wiping. So instead of like a washcloth, use a wet wipe or use a wet paper towel or something that's really, really soft.
Or maybe dry. Or something dry. A dry towel.
Yep.
Try those different textures.
I think the biggest thing here is to empathize and try a new way of approaching it. Make it positive, make it fun. I think using a mirror is going to be really, really beneficial in this case.
And then let them wipe your nose and wipe your face too. Reverse the roles.
Yes.
Or let them wipe your face first and then you say, all right, my turn to wipe yours.
Especially if this is during mealtime, chances are you're probably wiping your face during mealtime. Mm-hmm. So take turns.
Yeah. All right. There you go. Lots of ideas for that one. Question number two, sensory seeking kid melts after school. They seem to be overstimulated and dysregulated. Please help. Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like this is 99.9% of not only sensory kiddos, but
all kids.
All kiddos.
Oh, for sure. So this kiddo holds it together all day long at school, holds it together through all of the different sensory input, all of the cognitive tasks that are pushed on them, all of the things. And then they get home and they're in a safe space where they can just let it all go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So first thing I would do is offer a snack as soon as they get home. Talk less to them instead of immediately pounding them with questions and things that they're going to do and just talking to them nonstop.
So side note really quick, don't lose your train of thought.
Yeah.
But that's what I've had to do with my kid. He's in second grade and I ask him, you know, pick him up from school and I ask him one question. I just say, how are you? And then I don't ask any more questions until either he initiates conversation or we're home eating a snack, taking a break. And I probably, most of the time, I wait until dinner to ask him about his day.
Mm.
So I think that's a huge, huge point.
I'm glad you do that.
If a kiddo is holding it together at school all day, they don't need to talk about it as soon as they're done.
Yes.
Like, let them chill for a
minute. Let them chill. Okay. So after you stop talking to them, you give them a snack.
Please stop talking to them.
Give them a sensory-based activity to do. So I would highly recommend kicking them outside, have them play with chalk, jump on the trampoline, ride their bike, play in the dirt, swing, some sort of outdoor sensory-based, nature-based activity after school.
Yeah, definitely, if possible, for sure. If for some reason you can't get outside, have like a sensory corner or a sensory space in your house where they can go and just decompress with some favorite toys or fidgets, weighted blanket.
A sensory bin,
maybe like a lava lamp, some quiet music or headphones.
The body sock.
Body sock, a swing. Just allow them some free time to get the sensory input that their body needs.
Because it wasn't getting that input at school all day.
Yes.
Because chances are that wasn't part of the curriculum.
Nope. Wrong enough. If you have a chance on the weekend and if your child's able, see if they can help you create a plan for after school. And I say on the weekend because on the weekend it's probably more relaxed mm-hmm. and they're better able to think and process and plan. But make a list, use pictures of ideas for your child, of things they can do after school that they're going to enjoy and that's going to help them feel good. But if they're able to participate in the process of planning this out, that's even better.
I love that. All right, cool. Those are fun. I like these.
Yeah. So if you
rapid
want,
fire.
Yeah. If you want us to answer a question on the podcast, send us a DM on Instagram, All Things Sensory Podcast, or even at Harkla_family. We're there too.
Yep.
And thanks for listening.
Thank you. If you have questions, don't hesitate to reach out. Please leave us a review on iTunes. Those help us reach more families, more therapists, more educators, and we appreciate your feedback.
We're going to link everything in the show notes so you can check out all the research, all of the different ideas that we mentioned. And is there anything else?
That's it. We'll chat with you next week.
Okay, bye.
Thank you so much for listening to All Things Sensory by Harkla. If you want more information on anything we mentioned in the show, head over to harkla.co/podcast to get all of the show notes.
We always have the show notes and links, plus full transcripts to make following along as easy as possible for everyone. If you have follow-up questions, the best place to ask those is in the comments on the show notes or message us on our Instagram account, which is @harkla_family. If you just search Harkla, you'll find us.
Like we mentioned before, our podcast listeners get 10% off their first order at Harkla, whether it's for one of our digital courses, one of our sensory swings. The discount code SENSORY will save you 10%. That code is SENSORY. Head over to harkla.co/sensory to use that code right now so you don't forget.
We're so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world and work towards a happier, healthier life.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Just a friendly reminder, this is general information related to occupational therapy, pediatrics, and sensory integration. We do not know you or your child, therefore we do not know any specific needs. Therefore, you should always refer back to your pediatrician and occupational therapist for more information.